right, well.
We have a quorum. Doesn't matter, actually.
Wait till Megan.
We do now.
Wait. I'm here. Okay, now you can.
Let's open the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. Today is February 19th, 2019. Welcome, everybody. First, let me open up a public hearing on House Bill 2451. And we'll ask Representative Finley to join us, and then we've got some folks on the series of tubes known as the Internet that will be playing through that device on the ceiling, if all goes well, from Eastern Oregon. And we would like to hear what you've got against onions.
Oh, there they
Hello.
Are.
Hello.
Guys.
Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
Can you see us?
Yeah. They're waving. So
okay.
Hi.
Are we going to communicate by sign
So, thank you. Chair Clem, Vice Chair McLean, Vice Chair Post. For the record, my name is Lynn Finley. I'm from Vail, Oregon, and I'm the state representative for House District 60, which serves Malheur, Harney, Grant, Baker, and part of Lake County. I'm here in strong support and urge you to support House Bill 2451. A brief history, the law was originally created to improve the quality of onions being shipped out of Oregon, which would improve the region's reputation on the global market. The exceptional quality of the onions now from Oregon is well known in the global market, and the state law is no longer needed. The current law has become a redundant and has actually turned into an impediment for Oregon's onion industry, because no other state, except for a portion of Texas, has the same requirement. This is a simple bill. Most importantly, it will not affect food safety in any way, nor will it repeal the grades and standards for onions prescribed by the USDA. In case you were curious, if you've looked at the bill, it has nothing to do with marijuana. Don't ask me why it's there, but it's a related clause. It will simply repeal the grading of onions instituted what? By the Oregon Department of Agriculture and make Oregon onion growers more competitive in the global market. With that, Grant Kittemer from Baker Murakami Produce and Company will proceed with more detailed information as the significance and for need for this bill. Once again, I would like to thank you for having me, and I urge an aye vote.
Trying to figure out why all that marijuana stuff is in there. It's very strange. Anyway.
Is it to do with all the
You can thank our friends from Department of Agriculture for that, sir.
Yeah, it's very odd the way the bill's written. Okay, so let's talk with our folks here. Do you have a moment to stay while they
talk? I do.
Okay.
I do.
So let's talk with Grant Kittemura, Kay Riley, Jim Farmer, and Corey Mogg.
Correct.
Ooh, okay then. Welcome. I don't know if you have a preferred order, but I've got Grant and Kay up first, but it really doesn't matter to me if you've already worked out who wants to talk first. Go ahead, just introduce yourselves.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Ag and Land Use Committee. My name is Grant Kittemura. I'm from Ontario, Oregon, and I'm with Baker and Murakami Produce Company. Onion packers. I first of all would like to thank Representative Finley for sponsoring this bill at our request, and I'll tell you how it all started. My partner in business, Jerry Baker, has been on the Oregon Department of Ag Inspection Advisory Committee for 50 years, believe it or not. That's 5-0. And he encouraged me to move forward to eliminate or to repeal this mandatory inspection rule, which is 632.216. We did not request anything for marijuana either, so we look at it strictly a housekeeping bill. We worked with the Department of Ag and asked them questions. They said it was an obsolete statute, and agree with us on that. We do want to maintain our competitive situation with Washington and Idaho. If we do have a marketing order in place that supersedes and has stricter requirements than the state requirements. But if we ever change that, we want to be on a competitive playing field with Washington and Idaho. It's got nothing to do with food safety, as Representative Finley has stated, and it's just mostly housekeeping. We have part of every packer in Mountaineer County, as well as every the Growers Association, and Corey represents them, as well as every shipper across the state of Oregon. I think there's some folks there from Western Oregon to speak on this issue. That's all I have to say at this point in time. I'll turn it over to Kay.
Hi, I'm Mr. Chairman and others. I'm Kay Riley, and I'm General Manager of Snake River Produce in Nessa, Oregon. We're a grower, packer, shipper I represent. I have five growers that are partners, and we also do business with another 5 to 10 growers. We pack and ship approximately 1,500 semi loads of onions a year. I'm also chairman of the Federal Marketing Order, which has been mentioned, which has its own set of grade standards, which are superior, I guess you would say, to what the Oregon standard is. The Oregon law merely says that it has to be inspected. It doesn't have any grade requirement associated with that. You know, whether or not the grade standards stand with the marketing order is a completely separate issue. As Grant mentioned, if that were to change, then we would want to be on a level playing field with Idaho and Washington. There, and regarding the food safety issue, the inspections that we're talking about are quality and grade. That has nothing to do with food safety. The law is archaic, and it really doesn't apply to business today, and we, you know, wholeheartedly feel that it should be done away with. And with that said, I'll pass. I think Jim was next to speak, so.
Worthy Chairman and committee members, my name is Jim Farmer. I'm from Nessa, Oregon, and I own Fort Boise Produce, along with my brother Warren, and Deseret Farms, along with my brother Warren. Deseret Farms grows 500 acres of onions a year, and Fort Boise Produce packs and ships and markets 1,500 acres of onions per year. Everybody seems to be in agreement that this old law needs to be gotten rid of, and that this new modern law take its place. And it's very important for us to be able to compete with our neighbors in Washington and Idaho. And so we certainly endorse this bill, and hope that the committee will endorse it and approve it. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm Corey Mogg. I farm and got a packing operation, Jameson Produce, in the Vail area. We raise about 320 acres of onions, and then we'll pack about 100 million pounds a year, which represents about 900 to 1,000 acres. I also serve as vice president of the Mountaineer County Onion Growers, and this represents an area of about 12,580 acres, which is comprised and grown of about 70 to 80 growers in our area. I'm one of 14 board members that represents that area, and I'm not gonna, a lot of the stuff I was gonna talk about is the same stuff they've talked about, but it's real important that we're on a level playing field if something happens to our marketing order in the future. And if we do not get rid of the mandatory inspection, we will be at a distinct disadvantage as far as shipping onions, to where we're still required to inspect where they're not. One thing I would like to say is, though, inspection will probably continue, even though if something happened where inspection wasn't required, just because a lot of our customers require inspection. It's also it gives us some justification when we go to ship, and it also gives us some merit if we get a load that the buyer does not like, we have some sort of representation behind us. So, and once again, it will not affect the food safety. In conclusion, let's pass this House Bill 2451 so it keeps Oregon producers and packers competitive with our neighboring states. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Committee members, any questions? Wow, seems pretty straightforward.
I'll ask a question.
Okay, Vice Chairman Klein.
I want to ask a question. Who's your biggest competitor? If it's not Oregon onions, then who's your biggest competitor?
Well, I'll try to answer that. The Northwest provides about 85% of the onions for the nation through the fall, winter, and early spring. And our largest competitor is in the state of Washington.
Okay. Thank you.
Their onions are terrible. Ours are great. Sorry.
Absolutely.
Okay. your association includes both, so you can't say that, but I can say that. Okay. Thank you for using technology so we all can be safe and not traveling across the mountain passes for 8 hours to talk about onion elimination. This is working out pretty well. It's the first time I've actually seen this happen, and it's pretty cool. Thanks.
I have just like a silly question.
Yeah,
are you guys at an ag extension office?
Yes, we are. We're the Mount Hero County Ag Extension Office.
We're using the Oregon State University link.
It's not the U of O one, by the way, everyone, just for the record. No problem with that.
I'm agnostic, but I love the concept.
That's right. Representative Brock Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In fact, we will be using Oregon State University Extension offices for the sorry.
I was president of OSU, and he's a Duck, and I just hate really the Ducks, period.
All I care about
so,
is football.
Sorry.
Football. We own football. Okay. Just stop.
Whatever.
Anyway,
Representative Brock Smith.
And so we'll be utilizing the same technology for remote testimony, as you know, Representative Finley, for our remote carbon reduction testimony out of the coast and out of, I believe it's Baker.
Consistent with our carbon reduction
goals. That's a good idea.
Right.
Okay, I don't have any hair. Okay, let me call Greg Bennett, Trish Lavelle, and Lovell, and Dwayne Elder. Eater, sorry. Dwayne Eater. Yeah. God, please, they're this lowest form of humor. No puns. Oh, no. Oh. Oh, not onion puns, punions.
That's terrible.
Greg.
Why is it there?
Nice attire. I'm much better with that Oregon State Beaver vest.
Sorry, Vice Chair. I got a green hat. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, tell us about
you want me to
whatever you want to do.
Well, I can do this.
I think I can do this. Chairman Clem and Vice Chairman Post, our Duck friend, members of the committee, my name is Greg Bennett, and I'm a fourth generation farmer in the Salem Brooks area. I farm with my two sons, who are in the audience, by the way, and onions are our main crop. We also have a family-owned packing and shipping company. We sell onions throughout the U.S. and many countries outside of our borders. Northwest Onion Company would like to show our support for House Bill 2451 to repeal mandatory inspection from the Department of Agriculture. We have our own in-house inspector that does exactly what the ODA inspector does and more. Our in-house inspector is in our warehouse the entire time we're packing onions and does not only spot check like ODA inspectors, but because of the full-time inspection, we do feel we are doing a good or better job than the state-paid inspectors. We feel having mandatory inspections of our onions puts us at a financial disadvantage with our competitors in our neighboring states that are not required to pay for state inspectors.
We still believe that food safety is our top priority, but we would like to even the playing field from the financial standpoint. We feel like we are being penalized by having to pay thousands of dollars per year more than the onion packing sheds in Washington and Idaho states. It makes it very hard for us to sell the same onion markets as Washington and Idaho packers because we have a factor of extra costs for inspections. It is unfair to the Oregon onion industry. I thank you for your consideration.
Trish.
Hello, I'm Trish Lovell. I represent Curry and Company out of Brooks, Oregon. We are a packer and shipper of fresh onions. Basically, I'm here to help represent the other growers, packers, and shippers in Oregon that we are hoping that you will amend this bill. We currently we have an in-house inspector that has been trained by the ODA. We have the rules and regulations, and our customers require that we are certified global audit and that we inspect every onion, and we have certain specifications that we must meet in order to ship to our customers. And having an ODA inspector come in, it's pretty much redundant. They're doing exactly what we're doing, and in fact, our rules and regulations per our customers' requests, retailers, food service, wholesale, their requirements are even more strict than what is required by the ODA. And so we do feel that it is not necessary to have these in ODA inspectors come in. It's just repetitive and it's costly for the packers, the shippers, the growers, everyone, and it puts us at a disadvantage with other competitive markets in Washington and Idaho, and it keeps us on a playing field to where it's tough enough out there for the growers and packers and shippers, and any bit of help that you can to relieve some of those costs is most helpful. That's it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And is it Corey?
Dwayne.
I'm so sorry. I already had Corey on the last panel. Dwayne.
Corey. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm a onion grower and a member of Upland Produce, that we pack onions. And owners of Upland Produce show our support for House Bill 2451.
Wayne, I'm sorry, I have to have you say your name too, just because I said it, I know, but the rules are you say it.
Wayne Eater?
Yeah, great, thank you.
We represent the introduced the House by Representative Lynn Finley. The original status has become outdated and obsolete. Most, if not all, of Oregon onion growers already comply with good agricultural practices. Our onions are already graded and inspected in-house during our packing season, and our inspectors are even more stringent than what the law requires. It is necessary for us to know our quality prior to shipping in order to meet the market demands. The receiving end will inspect onions and on occasion will require federal inspection. Our onions have left our warehouse in excellent condition, and our inspections do not hold weight on the receiving end. The onion business is very competitive, so duplicating the expense of multiple grading and inspecting requirements places Oregon onion growers in a less competitive situation at a time when the onion market is expanding globally and domestically. Thank you.
Great. Any questions for this panel?
Thank you.
Seems pretty straightforward. Okay. Thank you, everybody. That's all. Oh, nope. Jonathan Sandow. Come add to the chorus.
I'm going to ask about the Brooks and our motive.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Brooke. Sorry.
You should look at the pros and cons. I don't go by location.
Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Jonathan Sando, Oregon Farm Bureau. I'll keep the testimony short. Farm Bureau supports House Bill 2451.
That is really good. That is very solid testimony. I'm not even going to ask for questions. I'm just going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2451. We will get this scheduled for a work session and get some paperwork.
Does the Farm Bureau have a statement on this?
Okay. We're going to move into some work sessions while we see if Representative Wilson is going to get to weigh in here on the industrial hemp issue. And so why don't we move to So I have a, should I do my committee bill?
Sure.
So I have a listed routinely possible introduction of committee measures, and you'll be surprised to know probably, because I haven't told any of you in advance that I have one that I want to introduce, and you have no information about it or no copy of it probably, do you? It's on OLS. No, yeah. So this LC is called LC 3936, Representative Brocksmith.
Is it a ag ditch bill that expands it to 5,000 cubic?
No, because we could amend the other bill to do that. This is about the canola, Willamette Valley Protected District, which was set up by a previous bill and law in the Ag Committee several years ago, I think 2015 maybe. And it is a, it is not a non-controversial issue, I will tell you that. But I did agree, and I don't have an actual strong opinion yet about where we go with this, but it is a bill that I think needs to be talked about. It has to do with the sunset of the current district, and we need to talk about it. And so this is a bill that is would extend the sunset longer for the current sort of program. But there are two sides to this issue, at least. But I would still like to introduce the bill as a committee bill. So that is my my request, if you all could consider it.
Chair Clem, I move that the following legislative concept be introduced as a committee bill, LC 3936, which is dated February 14th, 2019.
Vice Chairman Clem moves LC 3936, dated Valentine's Day slash Oregon's birthday, February 14th, 2019, be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Remember, committee members, that the precedent in the legislature so far, hopefully, is that voting to allow something to be introduced does not imply support of the bill, but just allows it to be introduced as a committee bill. And this one is going to be at the request of the Willamette Valley Specialty Seed Association. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the bill will be introduced as a committee bill. You may or may not talk about it later. We'll see. Okay, Representative Wilson, can you join us? And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2740. We once passed this before, and then it never made out of Ways and Means for inexplicable reasons. So we're going to try again to talk about this and see if we have some better luck. Ooh, and Representative Rock Smith.
Correct. The building.
Representative Wilson, please.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass. We've been at this hemp thing for a long time now in this process, and I'm really proud of the direction that it has gone, and we're very excited about where the industry is going. Every day we hear new stories, and most of those stories we like very, very much. And so we want to just introduce this bill today, talk just about what we have before us here, and just excited to request a hemp commission. We think that that is going to be something that is going to further boost the hemp economy, and I think furthermore put Oregon on the map for doing some very good things. So just want to introduce my friends today, and of course you know Representative Brock Smith, and Courtney Moran has been with us from the very beginning in all of our hemp work, and we just very much enjoy you giving favorable consideration to this request for a hemp commission.
And your fellow chief co-sponsor, Representative Brock Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, honorable colleagues, David Brock Smith, State Representative, House District 1, that of course is adjacent to our good Representative Wilson's district, and where a lot of the hemp farms are in this state. As we know, the federal government has deregulated recently hemp, and so I think this is timely that we move this legislation forward to create the Hemp Commission so that we can begin to expand the good work of these farmers in our state and in our districts. I think we'll have more details out of Courtney, but it's time to get this done and follow through with what the federal government has already made legal in this nation. So,
Courtney.
Good afternoon, Chair Clem, members of the committee. I'm Courtney Moran. I am the lobbyist for the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association. I'm also a hemp attorney for my law firm, Earth Law LLC. It's an honor here to testify before you today as we have developed this Oregon program to become one of the leading hemp programs in the United States. We have seen exponential growth over the past 4 years in our program. We started in 2015 with 9 farmers. Last year, we had over 570 farmers registered in the state, and I recently learned that as of last Friday, we had over 511 farmers already registered this year for the 2019 production season. The success of pilot programs like Oregon's has led to full federal hemp legalization, which was included in the 2018 Farm Bill signed by the President on December 20th of 2018. I fortunately had the opportunity to work with the offices of Senator Ron Wyden and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell in the drafting of the Hemp Farming Act of 2018, the language of which was incorporated into the federal Farm Bill of 2018, which did provide for full federal hemp legalization. Therefore, I have firsthand insight onto the intent of Congress when we were implementing and drafting the language that has now provided for that full federal legalization. As such, it is time for us to harmonize the Oregon program with that 2018 federal farm bill. The amendments to House Bill 2740 are still in drafting, but I will highlight those proposed amendments for you. One, we will be expanding the pilot program that we are currently operating under to a full commercial program, and we'll rename the program to reflect that. Second, we will be redefining hemp consistent with the 2018 definition provided for hemp in the 2018 Farm Bill, which is different from the 2014 definition for hemp that was provided in that 2014 Farm Bill. We will clarify ODA's authority over the program, including changing from registrations to licensing, and also clarifying the ODA's authority in gathering information from applicants on registrations, including background checks, to comply with the new felony restrictions that were put into the 2018 Farm Bill. We will also clarify authority for growers and handlers now that hemp is a federally legal agricultural commodity. We will also bring the program and the testing of end products into compliance with the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act, as well as Oregon's food safety program, while still maintaining safety checks on end products. Additionally, as Representative Wilson mentioned, we will be creating the Oregon Hemp Commodity Commission. The commission is program funded. It will provide additional industry input over the program and provide benefits of funding, guiding research, and promoting marketing of Oregon hemp. Dr. Jay Noller from Oregon State University will go into more details about the Commodity Commission for you. Thank you for allowing us to testify today and for considering our bill.
Make a comment?
Yeah.
I wanted to say that as far as I'm concerned, since I got here in 2015, that Representative Wilson and yourself have been probably the most... You stick with it. When you got it, you stick with it. And I feel like it's been so professional, and your work and everything you've done to bring this back to us has been amazing. And so I hope that this is the time.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions for this panel?
I have one.
Yeah, Representative Powell.
Chair. Representative Brocksmith, I'm not sure I heard you right. I want to make sure that I understand. You said that your part of the state has the most hemp or the best hemp?
We have the hemp. We have a lot.
I think it's the best.
I believe okay. It would be.
I just wanted to get that on the record.
I apologize, Mr. Chair, Representative Helm. I would never think that my portion of the district has better hemp than Representative Wilson's district does. I would never try to do that.
You call him Leader Wilson. He's actually your leader.
He is my leader.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice to hear. That's
another reason why I would never do that.
You would not do that. Okay. I will ask, we need to get Dr. Jane Aller up, and then Bill, I don't know if it's Sire or Lear, Liar. Oh, Sear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Sear. All right. That's like a kind of a crooked little thing. And Matt Cyrus, you want to fill out our Our panel then on deck is Rob Movette and Jonathan Sandow.
Good afternoon, Noller. Chair Clem and committee members. My name is Jay Noller. I'm head of the Department of Crop and Soil Science at Oregon State University.
They don't have anything like that at U of O at all, I don't think.
For the record, that is correct.
Anyway, sorry, please continue.
And so I'm here to answer any questions, but certainly to support and talk about agricultural commissions and what they mean to Oregon State University, particularly our College of Agricultural Sciences. We enjoy the largesse through research grants and further support of industries that we support across the state, be it Trawl Commission, the ocean, coming across the valley and the 20-odd commissions that look at agricultural products as well as Beef Council, et cetera. So when we look at this proposed bill, we see the opportunity to further support our efforts to engage and to provide research and extension to the industrial hemp industry. If we look at our past now in our fifth year of performing research that's been growing to where we're looking to bring it to all of our experiment stations across the state this year, because we find that the industry has grown to certainly depending on how you want to measure it, number three, four, or five in terms of the ag commodities in Oregon. By current estimates, we're looking at it to be the number one ag commodity in Oregon in 2019. And that when we look at the 2018 year, that Oregon has enjoyed upwards of $350 million new into the state because of our ag hemp industry. So probably looking at a trebling of that in this year and continued growth. So when I meet with farmers across the state, there's immense, shall we say, glee at the ability to be able to grow a crop that in 1 year, for some of them 3 years ago, grew and were able to sell their product for a farm gate value that was greater than the prior century of all in the current 2017 year dollars. And so when we think about the uptick, the movement of this, it means that the state is enjoying economic progress, seeing a enhanced economy. And Oregon State University serves, it's one of its primary missions is to serve the farmers of the state, to serve the citizens of the state. And having a commission is a state mechanism that takes a moderate amount of funds from the industry and brings it for their own advancement of their industry as well as for research that helps offset the problems that lie ahead. And certainly our current research program, we're looking out that 5-10 year window right now. We see some issues coming up, and we also see the issues of how do I redirect faculty to deal with these issues. It takes funding, and so having a commission on board means that we're able to look ahead, give them a view, and keep this industry marching forward. And I'm glad to be here at the table with members of the industry, which are just a few of the many, many hundreds that we serve and wish to serve. And this commission will help us do that. Thank you.
Bill.
Yes. Chair Clem, thank you, and committee members, thank you. My name is Bill Sear.
and I first moved here from an adjacent state in 2014 to be join up with the medical marijuana program. Primarily, we manufactured CBD products. That was our focus. And we're the first company to distribute quality manufactured CBD products in the program. My background is a lifetime of manufacturing of food ingredients, food products, where we were regulated at the highest level with Fortune 100 companies being our customers, and lots of audits, third-party audits. And so I wanted to come out of retirement and bring that experience and hope to help this new industry, which hemp wasn't on the map then, but I could see it coming, and that was my hope. So I showed up. I'm an Oregon resident, happy to be here. Thank you. So today, in 2015, I was on the first rules advisory for OLCC, kind of setting the playing field, the rules for the program. Mid-year 2016, I transitioned. I still have an OLCC processing facility, but put all my efforts into becoming an ODA member, a hemp handler. And our primary focus is manufacturing of packaged products. And although we're at the end of the supply chain, so seems that at the time that I joined as a hemp handler, I got to know growers, extractors. It was less than 1,000 acres being grown, so we're a small community. So I've grown with this. Presently at ODA, I'm part of the rules committee for testing. I'm always available, make myself available. I have facilities here in Salem. So I've been quite involved and want to remain being involved. On behalf of, moving on from there, totally support House Bill 2740 and the commission. It's a very important aspect of us growing in the state and having a functioning program. I'm also supportive of forthcoming amendments to House Bill 2740 proposed by the Oregon Industrial Hemp Farmers Association that would augment testing protocols for consumable hemp-derived products. Due to the passage of the 2018 Farm Bill, which clarified hemp-derived CBD is no longer a controlled substance, the hemp products to be treated like other agricultural commodities and ingredients, the hemp industry here in Oregon is at a pivotal moment. As a state, we have the opportunity to take part in this burgeoning economy, one that transcends state and national borders. But in order to do so, we must update our laws and to be competitive with other states and internationally. Currently, consumable hemp products are subject to the same testing as adult use marijuana, a testing process that is both rigorous and very expensive and takes away from the funds that we need in the hemp industry to invest in ourselves, in our own internal programs, similar to the food industry. Though it remains important to retain, you know, we understand about the THC content, the 0.3% THC, and perhaps a good move at this point would be just to test finished product, but it should be independently tested, not tested as marijuana under the OLCC and OHA program. So hemp-derived CBD is a food ingredient, and as other food ingredients, hemp CBD is regulated under the ODA and under the ODA food safety program. I've met with food safety people, I know them quite well, and you know, all the infrastructure is in place to regulate packaged products derived from hemp CBD as any food product. Moving on from there, we urge the support of House Bill 2740 and forthcoming amendments, and I thank you.
Hey, Matt.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to be here. I'm a sixth generation Oregon farmer. As such, through the years, we've always looking for
new and better and different crops, or especially in Central Oregon, find something in our that actually grows in our climate that's frosty and arid. And back in 16, we started raising industrial hemp and actually found a crop that seems to be suitable to our climate. It's extremely drought tolerant. We discovered it's also frost resistant, and probably the first cash crop in our...
Say your name for the record, sorry.
Sorry, Matt Cyrus. First cash crop that we've run across that is actually suited to our climate. Certainly, this crop has grown exponentially. The excitement in the industry, the potential for what it can do, both nationwide and internationally, everything from food, fiber, plastics, the amount of things that can be grown from this, and especially because of the nature of our growing conditions in Oregon, we're ideally suited for CBD production, more so than many of the other states. And from a value standpoint and acreage, this crop has grown roughly in 15, there was roughly 100 acres. 16, somewhere in the 1,000-acre range. 17, 3,500 acres-ish. In 2018, there was more than 11,000 acres grown. And the projection for 2019 is 45,000 acres. Value-wise, as Dr. Noller indicated, 2018 crop was worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $350 million. The projection for 2019 is around $1.5 billion, most of which is exported out of the state. And so that is new money coming into Oregon, into Oregon's agriculture. We have gone from a non-industry to the number one commodity in the state in 5 years' time. And so the timing is, it's time for a commodity commission. It's time to tweak a few of the minor rules to keep us competitive nationwide. It's projected in currently for 18 crop, Oregon was the number three producer in the nation. There's a strong possibility that in 19, Oregon will be the number one hemp producer in the nation. And we need this legislation to keep the ball rolling and keep the momentum going. And I certainly appreciate your support.
Vice Chair Post.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Any one of you guys would know, maybe know the answer to this. So there's been articles lately about, and forgive me if I get the vernacular wrong, but the THC hemp, there's an overabundance is kind of, I don't know if I could put it a better way, that we have more than we can deal with. Yet you were talking about growing more of the non-THC hemp. Am I saying that correctly? That would be like part of the question.
First of all, there's a little bit of a difference. This Matt Cyrus definition.
Okay.
Both are cannabis, divided by definitions of marijuana and hemp. Okay. Hemp is 0.3% THC and below. Marijuana is above 0.3. And so, yes, on the marijuana side, indications are, articles I've read, is that there's a 6.5-year supply currently of marijuana, which cannot be exported from Oregon.
Right.
Hemp, however, is an international market and is growing exponentially internationally because of the medicinal benefits of CBD as well as the fiber capabilities of the rest of the plant.
Okay. And I think you just answered my question, though. So, okay, now with those two definitions, with the apparently oversupply of marijuana and hemp is, you're growing a lot and it's growing and it's this great industry. So for the most part, then what's making this not be an overabundance? Does that make sense? The hemp. In other words, you're really, it's you're producing a lot of it.
As far as THC content goes, or?
No, I guess what, I'm not doing a good job here. So.
Okay, go ahead, Jay.
Vice Chair Post, Jay Noller. So in answer to your question, so hemp has multiple uses as opposed to the higher THC cannabis. Now, actually, higher THC cannabis has many of the same uses. It's just it has more of the euphoriant, psychotropic delta-9 THC. And so that, the concern there is that it has potentially illicit or unhealthful, or just, you could see globally a divergence in opinion when you look at THC. So the plant has mechanisms to produce the phytocannabinoids like CBD, CBG, other compounds that have purported uses. At the same time, it can produce fiber. It can produce short and long fibers, and those have all sorts of industrial uses, as well as the seed itself is a whole food, so it's one of the rare plant-based whole foods, so it has high omega fatty acids across a broad spectrum, just for instance, proteins, et cetera, very high, 20-30% protein within the seed, which oils can be extracted from. The flower and other plant materials, as well as seeds, can be brought into oil forms, which then can be refracted into processed. Into things that you would think petroleum oil is needed. So there's a great deal of global applications. And when we look at the push towards bioplastics globally, we know that China and Europe see, especially France, sees the hemp plant as a means of just cutting down their fossil petroleum imports, basically, because they're moving it in with a bio-based product. So there's a lot of potentials, and having a commission is a means of providing directing the universities, because it while OSU does enjoy a great amount of commission funding, the U of O and other universities, public universities, as well as private consultants, are engaged in research by various commissions. So.
Okay. If I could possibly add to that, Vice Chair Post, the CBD, which is the primary product grown in Oregon right now, is currently being added to a number of products nationwide. I'm looking at CBD-infused water. Coca-Cola has announced a line of CBD products, everything from Johnson & Johnson. You know, the health benefits of the CBD is... I mean, granted, there's not a lot of research on it, but there's a lot of excitement for that particular compound in the industry right now. And if I had to guess, I would estimate that 5 to 10 years from now, you'll find CBD as a standard ingredient in most healths or in most foods, just as you see vitamin C, because of what they've discovered as far as the needs in the body and the beneficial uses.
Thank you. May I add something?
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chair.
Sorry, I took over there for a second.
It's okay. You're gonna like what I do next here in a minute. Go ahead, please.
Bill's here. There, as I see it, there are three primary groups. You have strains that are used for seed oil extraction and meal. You have strains that are used for fiber. In the U.S., we don't have fiber processing capabilities where we could grow 45,000 acres and have it processed. In Oregon, we happen to have very high CBD strains that are propagating the U.S. Canada, they grow seed strains, fiber strains. Europe, they grow seed strains, fiber strains, and a certain level of CBD, but not to the percentages that we grow. So what we have is a unique opportunity in the U.S. where we're growing high CBD strains and not typically fiber or seed strains, although, you know, there are some seed crops. You can crush it, you get the oil, you get the meal, same as you get from soybean, except for it's a much higher value. So the challenges with CBD strains is the higher the CBD, the higher the THC. So that's something we need to manage. And that's what happens when you cross state lines and products impounded, because when state police goes in and pulls a sample, they pull a bud. the load may be, you know, the sacks may be filled full of buds, leaves, stems, stalks, and, you know, branches. So some of the extractors take a good portion of that and extract it. They don't just extract the buds. So what happens is, you know, there has to be work done to perhaps homogenize before you ship across state lines, or maybe the feds need to raise the THC level to 1%. 1% would help really solve a lot of problems of cross-border activity. But essentially, getting back to your question, three variety strains, you know, that are significant, and we're really, CBD is the best.
Thank you. Vice Chair McLean.
Well, I'm in support of this commission, and I think that's great. Our way, there were some hemp farmers that came and talked about the biggest problem with it now, even though, I mean, the crop has gone great. The continued planting is larger every year, and you've found your markets. But that some of the problem was when you're talking about the CBDs and you're talking about the THCs and the different strains, that if you're using the labs that are being used for, you know, testing THC in the marijuana strain or whatever, that that's causing problem for the hemp farmers for a number of reasons, including that our protocol in these labs are not very good, and if they don't clean everything and you bring in these products, that there's problems with actually knowing if the THC is really real or not. I mean, as far as the amount they say it is or how high it is or whatever. So what are we, I know we're not doing it in this bill, but where are we going with the industry on either trying to make their own labs, or like the fellow up my way had bought a building and was going to make his own lab to test his own material or his own crop. So
May
what's happening?
That?
Huh?
May I address that?
Well, I hope so.
Okay. With the history I have in the state going back to medical, I've done a lot of work around the testing labs. I've dissected their programs. In my past business, we were doing hundreds of tests a week, you know, for pathogens and bacteria on food ingredients. Mm-hmm. So I'm very familiar with labs, how they work. I know about NELAC and T&I standards. I really dissected the program. And what's happened, if we need our own hemp labs, there's no question. Working with Shimatsu manufactures these machines used in the labs called HPLC, high pressure liquid chromatography. These are the potency analyzers for marijuana. And through some work that I did, and as well as another company here in Salem, we developed a HPLC specifically for hemp. You see, I call it the Volkswagen version back in the 60s. That's what Shimatsu makes for the marijuana industry. High volume, there a lot of throughput per hour, lower resolution. The program's built around, all due respect, it's built around T&I standards, 70 to 130% acceptability level within a sample group that a lab tests. Not good enough for the hemp industry. We have developed a high resolution HPLC that tests for more cannabinoids than THC and CBD, full spectrum cannabinoids. This will really give us, cement us into the world market in being very precise, testing full cannabinoid panels. And it's a different HPLC, high resolution, less throughput, much more accurate. So when you take CBD, when a hemp farmer takes CBD into a lab and have it tested, they're taking it into a THC lab. Automatically, you have all kinds of cross-contamination issues. Yeah. How you deal with that at the lab level, I don't know. It's practically impossible. You use the same machine to THC, then you follow it through with CBD runs. Cross-contamination is just inherent. It's in the air. Once you grind up THC, You know, it's just like a bakery. You walk into a bakery, you're breathing yeast. It's in the air. Growing THC, it's in the air. Cross-contamination is an issue, no question. What do? We need labs to test. You know, I use food labs that, food labs can be ISO certified without going under the control of Oregon Health Authority or LAP. They're just independent labs that have the right equipment to test for CBD. So we do need our own labs. You can't just snap your finger and have them appear. For the time being, I think we have to use the OHA certified labs. But it puts everyone at risk. If you lose your crop because of cross-contamination, your option is to retest at the same lab, same cross-contamination issues.
With the same sample.
Same sample. It's really gonna hurt our farmers. It's gonna hurt our packaged product makers. It's gonna hurt all of us.
And if it tests hot, the ODA supervises you burning your crop.
That's right. Moving beyond the grower into the handler world where you're extracting, then you're under the control of ODA. You're under the control of these, what they call control studies, massive amount of samples that are pulled, thousands of dollars worth of testing. And all they do is tell you that you're making your product, you know, plus or minus 20% within a sample group. My God, you should be doing that plus or minus 5%, you know, to run a good business. So we really need to pull away from OHA, and all due respect, Orlap, set up our own lab. Food labs are all over the place. And, you know, they do a reasonable job for their industry. We need, all they have to do is add a piece of equipment to a food lab, and they're testing for hemp. So it is an issue. Thank you for recognizing that.
Representative Helm, then we've got two more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Witnesses.
I wanted to ask a question of Bill and Matt and maybe Courtney. There is an emerging small percentage of the market that is the sale of hemp flower. And it is ingested exactly the way that smoking cannabis is. And I think that testing for processed CBD the way that we've been talking about as an agricultural commodity is entirely appropriate, and I encourage us to go down that route. But there will be some concern about hemp flower and the testing protocols there. And before we make mistakes about assuming we're going to throw all testing into the same basket, can you help us understand what would happen to that small portion of the market?
Yeah, Matt Cyrus. We actually currently do sell trimmed hemp flower. There's actually a very a fairly large and expanding market nationwide, especially in the non-marijuana states. Significant demand for hemp bud. They're smoking it for the CBD benefits. The calming and soothing effect of CBD without the high, in areas where they are subject to jobs that are subject to THC testing, as well as areas where people who want to use it as a tobacco alternative. And so there is an emerging and greatly expanding market for that. At this point, I mean, from a testing standpoint, it makes sense that is going to have more stringent testing because nobody's sure what kind of chemicals might affect or be affected through inhalation. Currently, Oregon has zero tolerance for any pesticides. However, some of the batches tend to be a problem. Currently, batch testing is geared toward greenhouse grows, where you have multiple different, I mean, right now it's a 15-pound batch. So every 15 pounds has to have a several hundred dollar test. From an agricultural standpoint, when you're raising it in fields of, you know, 20, 40, 100 acres, Every 15 pounds, I mean, we put up 75,000 pounds this year, and if we were to send it toward the flower market at a several hundred dollar test for every 15 pounds, I mean, that's just absolutely prohibitive. So, I mean, testing for pesticides, sure. Batch testing, absolutely not. It makes zero sense. You know, random tests throughout, you know, your field makes a lot more sense, because at least in the agricultural side, we treat the whole field the same. And so if we were going to apply a pesticide, you're going to find it throughout the field. And so randomized testing makes a lot more sense.
Follow up.
I just wanted to give Matt a chance to respond to this assertion that West Side hemp is better than East Side.
Well, actually, climate-wise, the East Side, with the drier climate, is less susceptible to mold and mildew and a lot of the other things that are going to create a problem for hemp, and is probably more ideal for growing hemp than any other place in the state.
Okay.
Representative Helm, may I add one thing?
Very quickly.
Are you rebutting his comments there, sir? I appreciate that if you could.
I'll keep it short. Smokable is a problem, is an issue, understand, and we're working on a solution. If it has to stay in OLCC, it has to stay in OLCC. To me, that's not a good solution. What happens when, all due respect, but if you're shipping 16% CBD across state lines trimmed, you've got to be hot on THC. So we manufacture pre-rolls, and we're getting ready to manufacture cigarettes out of hemp. So what we do is we formulate the hemp to have CBD no more than 8%. That's the sweet spot, we call it, because there's a natural correlation. The higher you go with CBD, the higher your THC. When you go lower, your THC drops under 0.3, and 8% CBD with many strains in Oregon is the sweet spot where you're 0.3% or less by a point, half a point. So we shoot for about 7% CBD. Very effective, and it's under 0.3%. So what the flower market does is really a dilemma, because unless the feds raise to 1%, then it's going to be, you know, as I see it, rather risky to ship.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And this is what the commission will talk about once they get established. Okay. I'm going to call up Rob Bovet and Jonathan Sandow. And while that's happening, I'd like to introduce everybody to my little friend. I'm going to name him Bucky, because he's a little ducky who wants to be a beaver, and it says, I wish I was a beaver. He wishes he was Benny the Beaver, but he's actually Bucky the Duck. Here, can you see that? I'm not clear. Are you sure? There we go. Sure. Yeah, let's get it for the camera with your name right next to it. There we go. Here, can I borrow your laptop? Thanks. And just
sign to die. I don't think I've ever said poor Bill.
So, welcome, gentlemen. And Rob, I've got you first.
You're bad.
Chair Clem and members of the committee, for the record, Rob Ovett, Legal Counsel Association of Oregon Counties. Most of what I was going to say has already been said. Very much look forward to the amendments that Ms. Moran is working on. We need to do a lot more with this bill than what's just in the bill, but it's a good placeholder. What I thought I'd address that hasn't really been talked about much is interstate commerce, and I think it may actually address Representative Post's question in terms of the practical realities of how this lays out on the ground. So, you know, prior to this farm bill, for the most part, cannabis was a prohibited substance federally. Therefore, it was prohibited to transport across state lines generally, when I'm talking about marijuana in particular. But the Farm Bill changed all that, of course. So now, but it didn't change, let me put it this way, but it didn't change it in a way that was just like turning the switch. There's kind of a hitch built into the Farm Bill. The Farm Bill is designed for basically states to come forward and say, we've got a plan. that meets these seven federal goals. And I won't go through them all, but they're pretty obvious ones. Track production land, testing, disposal, enforcement, inspections, providing info to the feds, and giving resources to the State Department of Agriculture and personnel adequate to do all those things. And then you submit this plan to the feds. They approve the plan, assuming they approve the plan, then we are the primary regulators. The state of Oregon is the primary regulators of industrial hemp. And the benefit of that for our industrial hemp growers and transporters and processors is they get the full protection of interstate commerce and protection against state laws that would otherwise criminalize that activity. So you may have read that some short of 7,000 pounds got seized in Idaho the other day of industrial hemp. Well, until we get something approved under the Farm Bill, we can't fully protect the folks that you heard from here in the last two panels. So it's important that we make sure that the Department of Agriculture is given the power and the tools, and we conform our statutes to the Farm Bills so they can make an application to the feds to get our industrial hemp system protected at a federal level. And we don't have to worry as much about tracking 7,000 pounds through Idaho, where they don't allow industrial hemp. And their state statutes don't provide an exemption from criminal application. So that's how we protect people from state criminal law in other states. Right now, we've got some protections under federal law. So that's pretty key and important. That's one point I just want to make. The second real quick point is, as many of you know, I kind of de facto represent a lot of the law enforcement community in relation to drug policy, and we are still having a lot of frustrated state troopers and county sheriffs and chiefs who really don't have the technology in their hands to really do the kind of enforcement that the feds are demanding we do with regard to marijuana, because there's really no roadside test that we've supplied our state troopers with to tell the difference between industrial hemp and marijuana on the side of the road. And therefore, we let 100 pounds or 7,000 pounds go across the state line where people get in trouble. So I'm hoping that through the process of empowering the Department of Agriculture to meet these seven pillars as required under the federal Farm Bill, that they will take seriously their obligations to meet all of those seven, which would include some method for testing and enforcement here, which are two of the pillars. So very supportive of this bill, very supportive of the amendments that Ms. Moran described, and hopefully we can get maybe be one of the first states to actually have a federally recognized and acknowledged industrial hemp program where we can be the primary regulator.
Chair Klim, members of the committee, for the record, Jonathan Sando, Oregon Farm Bureau. I'll keep it brief. We're here to support 2740 in general terms that our policy supports commodity commissions. We will be tracking the bill to ensure that it's a beneficial entity for the hemp industry.
All right. Any questions for this panel? Representative Helm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Rob, so this interstate commerce issue, does that only apply to raw product like the stuff that Matt produces? It's it goes in the huge bales and can be sold, shipped via semi somewhere, as opposed to the processed product where we already know what it is. Does it apply to both? Is the threat to both processed CBD and raw materials, or does it alight on one more than the other?
Chair Klim, Representative Helm, it actually applies to all. So I think we need to get our state program certified by the feds so we can protect. I mean, I read this story just the other day about this poor trucker who's driving a truck, doing his job on the interstate highway, delivering close to 7,000 pounds of industrial hemp that's grown in Oregon, and he's arrested by the Idaho cops, right? Because he's got cannabis. And because we don't, and under state law, and because we don't have a certified program yet, we couldn't, because it's a brand new bill, right? So we need to adjust our statutes, get our program to conform, apply, and get folks like that protected mm-hmm. from criminal prosecution mm-hmm. by Idaho folks, because we're just driving down the road. So we can get the full interstate commerce protections. And that, as I read it, that applies to flower, bulk, process, doesn't matter. in order to get everybody the protections from those other states' criminal laws that we need them to be protected, we got to get this done.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay, seeing none, let me close the public hearing on House Bill 2740. And let me open a work session on, shocking. Oh, let me open a work session. Do I have to move the back away though for you to stay? Let me open a work session on House Bill 2057. And colleagues, we've got a series of fee-related, the first three in a row. Some are reducing, some are moving up potential fees, some are extending sunsets. Anybody need any actual explanations on these, or do you kind of remember what we heard a while ago? Okay. If you have questions as we go one by one, we could talk about them, but if not, I'll just take motions.
Okay. Chair Klim, I move House Bill 2057 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair McClain recessed Bill 2057 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, off to Ways and Means we go. Let me open a work session on House Bill 2058.
Chair Klim, I move House Bill 2058 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McClain moves House Bill 2058 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, who wants to carry the fee elimination bill? Can you hold Bucky while you do it?
No.
No? Okay. Then Rep. Bossart, okay, Rep. Vice Chair Post and Rep. Bossart Davis can flip a coin later and decide who gets to carry the no fee bill and tell Laura. Okay.
Let me. Take away then the fee.
Yeah,
I'll take the takeaway fee.
That was the takeaway fee.
It is the takeaway.
Yeah, that's the takeaway.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Let me open a work session on House Bill 2059.
Chair Klim, I move House Bill 2059 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair McClain moves House Bill 2059 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, off to Ways and Means we go. And open a work session on House Bill 2060. Colleagues, this was the bill about closing down food establishments who haven't gotten a license or haven't renewed their license after many attempts. I had asked with Vice Chair Post for some more language about how many warnings they got or how that works, so it wasn't just a write off the bat. We've got these dash two amendments. Maybe Laura can tell us a little bit about them. The intent is to largely reference a whole bunch of things that were already in other rules or statutes that do give people those warnings, but maybe Laura can tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, Laura Kentness, LPRO analyst. Chair Klem, members of the committee, the dash two amendments insert some language that essentially state prior to ordering the condemnation or closure of a food establishment, if it's an authorization that has lapsed, it's simply a cross-reference to the process the department goes through before they can then order a condemnation or closure. In the case that it's an authorization for a food establishment operation that has not ever been obtained, the Department of Agriculture in that case provides a rule that allows a floor of not less than 45 days and subsequent notices before they can then authorize.
Any questions about the dash twos?
I just want to carry
Brock Smith.
No, I just want to carry the bill.
Okay. Vice Chair McClain, let's get those dash twos considered.
Chair Klim, I move to adopt the dash two amendments dated February 7th, 2019.
Vice Chair McClain moves the dash two amendments dated February 7th, 2019. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so adopted.
Chair Klim, I move House Bill 2060 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McClain moves House Bill 2060 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. Now, would somebody want to carry this? No, I feel like, let's see. Representative Brock Smith, will you hold Bucky while you carry this, or at least have him on your desk?
Sure.
Okay, then you can carry it. Hey, Bucky. Oh, I thought Bucky went missing.
Although I see no reference. With OSU and...
Well, it's the Department of Agriculture. We're the ones that, like, make sure all the food's there, and then the U of O eats them and pays high bills at fancy restaurants in downtown Portland.
We throw it when it's brown and...
That's true.
Oblong.
Not that well, it turns out. But anyway, with that Civil War loss last night, anybody want to talk about anything else? Vice Chair Post.
I just want you to take very careful note that I just allowed fees.
I
know you're shocked.
Laura told me. I said, Post is okay. Are you kidding me?
These are the first fees since I've been in the legislature that I said yes to, because ODA did a fine job of convincing me that they were worthwhile. So I don't, either that or I've gone mad. I don't know.
Very good.
Noted. Noted and shocked. Yes. And with that, everybody, thank you for your time and attention. We'll see you on Thursday.